Okay, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the first session of the Domain Name System Working Group at RIPE 58. If you're looking for something to talk about with regard to internet exchanges, this is the last chance to leave the room, because our friendly door bouncer, Jim, is trying to close the gates. So, my name is Peter Koch. I'm one of the co-chairs of this working group. The other one is Jim in the back, and we have Jaap finding his seat over there. We have two sessions, one right now, the other one tomorrow morning. And we have some administrative stuff to go through. First of all, this working group has a homepage, surprise, on the RIPE website. We do have a mailing list for the old-fashioned people. It's dns-wg-request@ripe.net. For everybody else, it's a mailman interface. We do have Jabber, a Jabber session active and probably remote participation. The Jabber room is given here. I hope I copied that correctly. We have Wolfgang doing the JabberScribe and Adrian doing the minutes. Wolfgang, do we actually have remote participation right now?
Yeah, there are.
Okay, so welcome also to the remote audience, and I'd appreciate slight audio feedback to the Jabber room so that we could adjust if there would be any problems. Remote participation also means that I'd like to ask anybody raising their voice or speaking or contributing, please go to one of the AIL microphones, state your name and, if you wish, your affiliation, so that both the minute takers, the online scribe, and the remote participants know who you are, and the minutes can be, or your deeds can appropriately be minuted. I guess the first kind of official action is approving the previous working group session minutes. We sent around the minutes, I guess, last week, mostly due to a delay caused by your friendly chairs. Well, actually, we had some nits to discuss, and then found out that, oh, it's RIPE 58 around the door. Let's get these things out. Nonetheless, are there any comments to these minutes sent to the mailing list? Any objections? Anybody interested? Okay, I guess we can declare the minutes approved. Thank you. So, next action probably is to have a look at the agenda. This is today's agenda, and we will also have a sneak preview of tomorrow's items. We are in midst agenda bashing and admin's trivia. We will have a very short action item walkthrough, and then a couple of different reports, as mostly a short report from the IETF meetings, or what happened in the IETF in general. We will have a contribution given by Rick Lamb from ICANN/IANA with regard to the ITAR and other issues, DNS-related issues that might be of interest to this forum. We will probably not really have a report from the DNSSEC Task Force, but I'll come back to that later. John Crane from ICANN will give a short report of the Global DNS Security, Stability, and Resilience Symposium that took place earlier this year, and Shane Kerr from ISC will give a sneak preview of Bind 10. After that, we will have the regular update from the RIPE NCC, given by Anand Budev, who is sitting over there, thank you. And Jaromir Tarier is giving the DNSSEC update for the top-level domain of the Czech Republic. And I apologize for mispronouncing the name. Okay, tomorrow, there will be another report by the RIPE NCC. Those of you on the mailing list, and by the way, doing some gymnastics here, how many of you are not on this working group's mailing list? Okay, that is like 20-ish people. Those of you not on that mailing list missed the important discussion about the reverse free lane delegation reports. You can look them up in the archives, of course. Seriously speaking, there were some issues or questions raised, and Anand is going to address them in tomorrow's report and giving some background on this project and informing the working group, which is okay because the working group at some point back in time tasked the NCC or gave an action item to the NCC to actually do this. We will have a couple of presentations about DNSSEC, DNSSEC software, so to speak, OpenDNSSEC. Patrick Waldström from the Swedish Registry will give that, I guess. Matthijs Mekking from NLNet Labs will talk about their AutoTrust software. And I have no idea how action item 8 made it on the agenda. This is copy and paste. We will have Joao with a survey of pre-delegation checks. Johan Irene will present some thoughts about DNS root zone scaling. And we had two presentations in the plenary regarding, related to DNS. And we will have roughly 10 minutes to talk about these in tomorrow's session and then any other business. And if you look at the agenda, there's 0 minutes for that, but we still have somebody signed up, so we'll sneak that in somehow. Any changes, change requests or additions, deletions, except item 8 for the agenda? Nothing? Everybody happy so far? Great. Okay, agenda accepted as proposed. The action item walkthrough. So we try to behave as a working group, so do some work, or at least assign work items to certain people. There's a list of these open and closed and proposed action items given under that URL, which is accessible also from our homepage. And if you go there, you will find exactly two action items that are currently open, 51.4 and not 49 point something that I falsely submitted to the agenda, is the action item on myself on continuing work on RIPE 203bis, recommendations for SOA values for a particular type of zones. Again, the dog ate my homework. I got some interesting feedback in between, but that is still waiting for incorporation in the next version. Anybody read that document, by the way, or even remembers what that was about? Cool. Actually, there was nobody for the minutes. Okay, as I said, it's about a recommendation for how to choose all the values in the DNS SOA record for small and stable zones, what we called it at that time. Anyway, work is ongoing there, and unless anybody objects violently, I would propose to keep that action item just to not let me get away with not doing the work. Any comments on that? Thanks. Yeah. The next one is a rather fresh action item, 57.1, which was assigned in Dubai and actually was given to the RIPE NCC and Anand in particular, I guess, to find out about the key signing keys for those zones maintained by the RIPE NCC and pros and cons regarding their entry into A or the DLV repository. This will be postponed to the later report that Anand will give, and he will address that probably. Okay, any questions so far? Okay, so then let me just very quickly continue giving a short report on what happened in the IETF. I'll just give some bullet items here because we had to sneak in some more presentations, and I've already wasted too much time already. So in the IETF, there are basically two working groups dealing with the domain name system. The one is the DNS extensions working group, which is mandated to take care of everything that has to do with the protocol immediately. The other one is the DNS operations working group. Olafur, are you in the room? Olafur Gudmundsson, one of the co-chairs of the DNS Extensions Working Group is around, and the DNS Operations Working Group I'm a co-chair of, so If you have any particular questions afterwards, you're welcome to approach either of us. I'll list the agenda, some of the agenda items of these working groups in a second. So these are the two working groups, protocol, operations, and then there's, of course, the IAB, the Internet Architecture Board, that from time to time has some ideas about what happens or should happen with the DNS. And there is another RFC published by the Internet Architecture Board about the so-called design choices when expanding the DNS, which is more a list of guidances for protocol developers and only partly to operators, how new protocols or new protocol proposals should optimally use the domain name system. Basically, it is about not using TXT records, but come up with good proposals for your own new record type. And this is in 5507. Okay, DNS Extensions Working Group. The ITF also has lots of websites, of course, but the tools website is a very convenient vehicle to get access to the working group materials at a glance. All of the active internet drafts are listed there, and there are links to tools that provide diffs between different versions and stuff. That's the way to go when you're interested in what the ITF is doing in these areas. There are a couple of open issues for this working group. Actually, the state of the working group is, and that was why I was looking for Olaf, for the working group is kind of in a zombie state. It is was sent to sleep, I guess, two or three ITFs ago, but then lots of new items popped up on their agenda, and stuff is ongoing. So the working group did not meet the last time, but still tries to get work done. So zone transfer clarifications has been on their agenda for quite a while. DNAME clarifications, so you see this is protocol maintenance mostly. Of course, DNSSEC is important. You may or may not have heard that the SHA-1 hashing algorithm has lost a bit of faith in certain circles. So people have come up with a proposal to use or replace SHA-1 with SHA-256, and this is addressing this, making use of SHA-256 in DNSSEC signatures. The document is, I guess, authored by Vater, if I remember correctly. Oh, I'm sorry, Hjalte Janssen sitting over there. It is in working group last call or has passed it somehow.
It's almost in last call.
Oh, it's almost in last call. Okay, it was short of being last called. Anyway, so this is a very, very actively maintained document. Another one, DNSSEC BIS in RFCs 40, 33 through 35 has been published quite a while ago, and it turned out that during implementation and deployment, several people actually had live experience with that and fed back some of their experiences into an update document, which is tasked to collect ambiguities and maybe even errors in the specification to do better next time. Probably important or very interesting for this audience is a document that is both aimed at operators as well as implementers of DNS resolver software, RFC 5452, making DNS more resilient against forged answers. It was actually the response to the so-called Kaminsky attack before the attack was actually publicly made available. The working group started on this ahead of time without even knowing what was going on. So this is one of the ITF's responses to the Kaminsky problem. The real answer, of course, is, as mentioned, two bullets above DNSSEC. Another document right on the DNSX agenda, and that I guess is in last call, is the CPE, Customer Premise Equipment DNS Proxy Implementation Guidelines, also work that was triggered by operational experience from DNSX deployment, where people found out that, some of the packets aren't really passing through our home routers, and something should be done about this. And this is both aiming or mostly aiming at implementers again, but it's also very important and interesting for internet operators, especially if you have loads of broadband customers. newly appeared stuff, additional crypto algorithms for DNSSEC, the GOST suite of algorithms from the, I guess the correct statement is it's the CIS, the Commonwealth of Independent States Standards Organization, that standardized public key cryptography as well as hashing algorithms. And there's lots of discussion going on right now how to incorporate this in the DNSSEC suite. And then DNS 6.4, that is about IPv4, IPv6 migration and coexistence, actually a proposal coming out of the so-called BEHAVE working group that deals with network address translation, also in the context of V4 and V6 coexistence. And since there's much of DNS going on there, both the DNS extensions and the DNS operations working group are cooperating and reviewing that document. DNS operations, okay, same here, tool site. Another RFC that has come out during the last couple of months, 5358, preventing use of recursive name servers in reflector attacks. That was basically the one that was recommending against open recursives. We have talked about that a couple of times in this forum, I guess. We have on our agenda a document about DNSSEC trust anchor formats. So if I publish a trust anchor like the NCC does or anybody else who signs a zone and doesn't have a signed parent, what format should that be and in what format should that be incorporated into your resolver software? So it's both, again, aiming at implementers a bit, but also interesting for operators. DNS resolver priming, I guess I've mentioned that the last time in the context of IPv4. Okay, it's falling into sleep on behalf of you, I guess. Okay. Yeah, exactly. That what I will accelerate. Point taken. Okay. Thank you, Peter. RFC 4641 bis. That is 4641 bis. 4641 is the RFC that describes DNSSEC practices. So what key sizes to choose, how to do key rollover, at which at what frequency do key rollover, and so on and so forth. Practical experience and the evaluation of the .org proposal to sign that top level domain has led to a plethora of feedback, so to speak, that has found its way into proposals for an update to that document, which is fine because, as you can see from the number, the RFC itself is, I wouldn't say age, but a couple of months old, so to speak. And feeding back practical experience is a good thing. Again, probably very interesting for this audience, something that could arise from this action item, a document that is in last call in DNSSOP, requirements for a name server control protocol. The idea is that many people have heterogeneous farms of name servers using different flavors of name server software like Bind, NSD, blah, 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 you name it. Would very much appreciate to be able to have a unified interface to those when it comes to reloading, adding and removing zones, and all of these tasks. So the group set together, a design team actually set together, come up with requirements, and this is what the group came up with. And the subsequent work will be the one that is then probably influential for this audience, which is actually the specification working on the actual name server control protocol, bounded or, say, guided by this set of requirements. This has just been a discussion so far. RFC 1123, that is a cast in stone old RFC, actually a walkthrough through all of these internet protocols back then. There is a reading that says, okay, top-level domains must only be alphabetic, and some people read it the way that there are no dashes allowed, which would probably be in conflict with IDN domains because they start with X and dash dash, and strictly adhering to the protocol or to the text there would bring some people in trouble. So there's some discussion going on how to make this change, how to apply this change with the least changes possible. And then again, in relation to RFC 4641 bis, we have a proposed document on DNSSEC key rollovers and a very exact timeline how to work there, which is then again operationally interesting for DNSSEC operators. And that's probably it. Questions? Monsieur.
Stefan Bortsmeyer, AFNIC. Maybe I didn't listen enough, but about DNS extension, did you mention the possible future work on the forgery resilience plus plus cookies, EDN zero ping, or 0x20, which raised a lot of talk?
Of course, I was intentionally trying to avoid this very controversial topic. No, just that just dropped off the slide. So thank you for that addition. There's currently actually ongoing discussion whether or not to do something besides DNSSEC and which of these various, which of these many proposals to follow, and the working group hasn't made up their mind yet. Thanks, Stefan. Any more questions? If not, then I guess, who's next on the agenda? Rick Lamb, could you?
Hi, I'm Rick Lamb. I work at ICANN. I'm the guy holding the DNSSEC hot potato there right now. So I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the interim trust anchor repository stuff that we've been doing. A lot of this work, most of this work done by, and including this, most of the slide deck has been done by Kim Davies, my office mate. So a lot of the credit should go to him. I take all the blame, though. So. First time I've used a Mac for this. All right, so the interim trust anchor repository that we have in place now, I don't know how many of you guys have played with it, but it's still in beta, but people are using it pretty consistently. It's a mechanism for the top-level domains to register their keys. Right now we're taking DS records. There's been some talk about maybe taking some other records instead. Once the root is signed, the idea is that this would go away. It is currently considered a stopgap measure. However, if there's interest in keeping it around longer, I think it's important for people in this community to voice that. So that's the current plan. Decommission it once the route is signed. Here's a picture, actually, of what we have in place. It's actually very close to what we have in place right now, including the signed root test bed that we've had running for almost 2 years. So in fact, the normal NS records in Glue get processed the way they always have. There's no change there. We take that database directly from either an L root feed or whatever. And we feed that directly into a system that validates the DS records. The ITAR, the Trust Anchor Repository that we have now, actually is fully functional in the sense that all the processes and procedures are being followed. When we get a request for a DS record or a key, a TLD key to be inserted, we go through the whole process of sending out email to the technical contact, the administrative contact. We do those checks. We do technical checks. It's really just like the rest of the IANA process for many other functions. The only thing that doesn't happen, as you notice in this picture, is once the once the record is passed all these tech checks and the administrative and all the tech contacts have been notified, we publish them directly. So there's no step through the Department of Commerce or anything else.
This might work better. All right. So we follow the recommendations that were provided by Ripe, and I have to, I'll be thanking him a number of times. I'll have to thank Daniel Karenberg for the whole idea of the Trust Anchor Repository. I think this is a, at first I was a little skeptical, but I think it's a very useful tool. It's designed, I mean, if you've looked at the interface is really simple. It allows for just a pure web-based interface, and even though it's simple, you'll find out in later slides I'm going to show that there's some problems that we've been having. User education problems. It's set up to work on any one of a number of the DNS packages out there. In fact, Kim's written some scripts to make this all as easy as possible. Almost fully automated, of course, automated to the extent that the processes that we normally have to validate these keys are still have human components in them, as I think they should. And of course, it's going to help the whole deployment process. Here's some short screenshots of what we have. You'll notice that the web page itself actually has an EVCert associated with it. One of the ideas here is this does form a chain of trust. So what we put on this web page should be somehow verifiable and validatable. And so instead of we spent the extra time and effort to actually get an EVCert, which requires all kinds of things like, you know, CFOs to sign off on things and to prove that we are who we are. So we got one of those for this. It's also PGP signed. So if there were mirror sites that wanted to take copies of this, there's also a PGP signature on this. There's the page. You guys can go to it as easy as anything else. We're still looking for comments. Of course, we're always looking for comments, but you know, any feedback would really be helpful in the way this thing works. Okay, I guess I move a little quicker. All right, the experiences we've been having so far, there have been a lot of just user errors at this point. People put in the keys with too many spaces or entering the wrong keys, wrong algorithm types. We've had this a number of times going around. So in response, we've added more checks, more technical checks in the system. So if someone enters something, they get immediate response back instead of waiting a few days before they get any feedback. It's actually working pretty good at this point. And we have, you know, a lot of keys in there. We got all the popular ones, .gov, .br, .bg, all these guys are in there, .sc. All right. So here's some requests we've gotten from the community. Is there a way to maybe suppress some things? The NSEC3 records, we do have support for those key types as well now, if you look at the pull-down menu. SHA-1, should we prohibit it? All right, and there's been a number of requests saying DNS keys might be better than DS records. So, and then we're looking at all that. Now I'm going to switch a little bit to the update, just a generic ICANN update of where we are. You know, we've been asked to sign the root by a number of TLDs as well as another companies as well. There was a notice of inquiry that happened back in November of last year, and the response pretty much was 20-1 in favor of ICANN signing the root. Your mileage may vary. But I want to get to this next point here. I've been going to a lot of conferences outside of this group, some like the RSA conference in San Francisco and things like that. And these aren't new revelations to any of you, but there are a number of revelations in that community, that's why it's in quotes, regarding DNSSEC. There's this whole idea that you can do a lot of other things with it. And I know RFCs and things have come out that for DKIM as well as SSL, well as SSH and various other things to hang other systems that need a source of trust in DNSSEC. I'm going to try to I spent a lot of time talking to Dan Kaminsky, and he's one of the guys that's really pushing this stuff hard. So he sees this as being, well, what do people already trust? Well, the world already trusts DNS to a certain extent. Well, if we add DNSSEC to that thing, well, now we actually have a cryptographically traceable chain of trust. And this is extremely valuable for a lot of things, solving a lot of cybersecurity problems, not just, you know, spam and the usual things. And I know people have different views of this. DNSSEC should never be used for this. Maybe it should be used for this. I'm just reporting what I hear and the crescendo that I think this is building up to. That's one of his, just one of his slides, but it does. This cross-organizational authentication is something that is a fundamental problem for being able to trust someone that you actually haven't established a trust relationship with previously. So, all right. This is our test bed. I'll just show that picture real quick. You know, it's real. We have a lot of stuff going. This is our IANA test bed where we have assigned root. It's been around for almost 2 years now, 22, 23 months. We have watchdog sites looking at it. We have great Anycast service that's been provided by PCH and others that cover the world. It's cool stuff. Really appreciate PCH and the DYN TLD folk. Try it. Again, better to fail now than to fail later. There's the mask. There's some masters there you can connect to. They are Anycast. There's some recursive resolvers out there. One courtesy of OARC. Very much appreciate that. Bang on it and try to make it break as quickly as possible, as soon as possible. Let's see. All right. And this is just that slide trying to point out what I think the larger security community out there is starting to see. Like I said, like at the RSA conference. This could be something that actually could be really useful to a broad set of problems and an international group of people that are studying cybersecurity right now. A lot of buzzwords. There's an upcoming event in June, and if you're not on the DNSSEC deployment list, you wouldn't have seen this, but I'm sure a lot of you are. And if you're not, just ask me, and I'll send you the invitation. But there's going to be this event in the middle of June on how to deploy assigned root. And in fact, they're going to talk about some critical issues here, distribution, rollover, et cetera. It is limited, the number of people that will go to this thing, but if this is something that's near and dear to your heart, I encourage you to try to get invited to this thing. The choice of location wasn't mine, but there it is. Let's see. That's pretty much my talk. I just want to make sure I didn't miss anything here. One of the things, again, about having this extra, being able to use DNSSEC as this other source of trust is that it actually does provide also some resiliency to the network. I mean, there was that MD5 crack that happened back in December of last year. It would be great just to have another source of trust that we could all check against. You know, are you sure? Is there somebody else I can check with? So I think there is a lot of opportunity there, and so that's something to keep in mind as we go forward to trying to get the root signed and you know how the process and procedures actually get determined. That's it. I'm going to leave it open to questions at this point. Does anyone have any questions?
Okay. Thank you, Rick. Go ahead.
I'll catch you after.
Okay.
You said that the ITAR file is signed with PGP, but the last time I checked, the PGP key was not signed by anyone, not only anyone I know, but anyone. Isn't it a problem?
It is a problem, and that's why it's one of the reasons why it's still beta. We'd like to change that. In fact, what I'm working on personally is to actually port some of the GPG code to use a level 4 HSM to secure the whole thing, and then also have that key signed by other people as well. I mean, there are two parts to this, right? We need to get some more, create a larger web of trust, but also you don't want the private key or something like that just to be sitting somewhere. I mean, essentially, this ITAR is assigned root, so it should have the same level of protection. And so we're working at building both increasing, making that more public so we can increase the web of trust, but also to be able to use something like an HSM, some hardware module to actually store the private key material.
Which means that in the meantime, the PGP signature should be ignored because it doesn't have the same level of security.
It should be what?
Ignored.
I don't know if it should be ignored. It is still in beta, but we will. We're working on it as quickly as I can.
Okay.
So,
Okay. Jim Reed, not wearing any hats or anything like that.
All right.
Rick, I want to say thanks very much to you and your colleagues for all the work you've done with the ITAR. I think it's a great piece of work and a great benefit for everybody.
I have to thank you guys, like particularly Daniel, for coming up with the idea and pushing real hard.
Okay.
So.
Now comes our question. As we all know, the NTIA ran a consultation exercise last year on a number of proposals and potential mechanisms for signing the route. There's been a deathly silence since then. Okay, there's been a change of administration and maybe things are taking longer to sort out in the Department of Commerce. But I wonder if you've got anything to say about any protective plans or prospective plans or insights into what the next steps are likely to be. I mean, are we going to get a route signed soon? And if so, when? And what do you think the next steps are likely to be in this exercise?
Well, I think at this point, we're still in a holding pattern with regard to commerce. We are not just sitting around idly. There are discussions with them. I'm not allowed to speak about some of the discussions. I would love to, but I'm not allowed to.
Can I ask you about those over beer?
It was not over beer. If it was over beer, I think we wouldn't have had a problem. But I'll repeat what I said at an apricot meeting earlier in the year. Not dependent on any information, any special information at all, just looking at the general, this is what I do day in and day out, and I see the buzz. Just based on public information and personally, when someone asked me at that apricot meeting, how long before the route is signed? End of the year. So I stick by that guess, and that's not based on anything other than just public information.
Okay.
And what I just see the efforts behind, some of the efforts in the DNSSEC deployment group, which have been really good, some of the efforts that have been going on in other places. It's clear that there's a lot of pressure. Commerce is listening to that pressure. We're listening to that pressure. Get the route signed. We hear you.
Okay.
So that's why I say,
thanks. Just for my own benefit, maybe for those that maybe just didn't quite pick up on that, when you say signed by the end of the year, I take it you mean 2009.
That's my personal view, yes. All right. Are you out of time?
I actually heard Paul Toomey say 2 weeks ago it will be December 2009, the latest.
Great. So watch out. You got what you want. So go on.
John.
John Schnitzlein, the Internet Society. I'm glad Jim asked that because I was going to. I have another question. In the ITAR, the way you had that phrased was DNS key records instead of DS records. Do you really mean both?
I think we mean both.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a question of whether we want to support both or not. And right now we're just doing DS records, but Kim's got some scripts up there that'll convert one to the other and try to make it easy for you. But anyway.
Hi, I'm Richard Barnes from BBN.
Hey.
I had a couple questions, a couple comments and one question. The first comment is just to thank you guys for being so proactive on this. I think the ITAR is a good step to getting a lot of deployment experience. As a step to the signed route, and that's my second comment, is to please decommission this thing and stick to that plan when the route is signed, because it's important for the overall integrity of the DNSSEC system to have that hierarchy in place. The PKI system is the major experience we've had in the security community.
So let me understand, you would like it decommissioned?
Yeah, I would like to for people to rely on the route instead of on this trust anchor repository, because that it sort of creates a consolidated model that's not fractured, right?
Yeah.
It creates a single hierarchy.
I understand.
Okay,
yeah.
And the question I had was, when I first got the email announcing that the ITAR was out in beta, I went and downloaded the Trust Anchor list, and mm-hmm. I clicked on the little icon to look at the certificate that was being used to support TLS for this. And I noticed that it was issued under the GoDaddy CA.
Yeah.
And so the entire DNSSEC system now chains up to GoDaddy CA. And so I was curious why you chose to go to an outside vendor. As much as I love to have Danica Patrick associated with the DNS, maybe.
It's an easy cert. It's a lot more than that, okay?
But, you know, especially if you're looking at deploying HSMs and real, you know, level 4 crypto, why not have ICANN act as a CA, to certify all this data rather than...
I'll have to be absolutely... Have who be the CA?
Or whoever is running the ITAR, or IANR.
Well, it had to be a CA that everyone would recognize, so we're really talking about a small handful of... And it wasn't a conscious decision. It wasn't specifically chosen. GoDaddy wasn't specifically chosen. This was just, let's just find something that meets all the requirements of an EV cert. And yeah, GoDaddy has a certain reputation, but let's find something that gets all the, it met all the requirements. And in fact, what we're also hearing from some people is that the PGP signing would be the more important part, and so that we should spend some more time focusing on that, because there might be mirror sites of this, and they're going to have different web page signatures as well. But yes, sure. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Rick. And I guess next on the agenda is right on time, the reports from the DNSSEC Trust Anchor Repository Task Force, right? Are we saving some time here?
Not really.
No slides?
There are no slides for this. It was just a very quick... Yeah, there are no slides for this. My apologies, but this is just a very quick update. You will remember a while back that we set up a small task force to look at the attributes of what we think were necessary for a trust anchor repository, and we then sent that off for consideration to ICANN at the point where ICANN was considering putting together a trust anchor repository, and I think the input that we gave was very valuable to Rick Lamb and the others that did that work. Now, there's still, once we'd done that, we decided that at that point the task force wouldn't necessarily be disbanded, but it would be put into a sort of zombie state where we could reactivate it if we felt it was necessary to bring this task force back from the dead. Now, at the moment, we think the small action item that is sort of left dangling for this task force to look at, and that would be to consider how well the ICANN Trust Anchor Repository reflects the attributes and considerations that the Trust Anchor Repository came up with that were then endorsed by this working group. So we tried to get the task force together to do that during the right meeting. So for a variety of logistical reasons, we just couldn't get enough of those people to be in the same place at the same time this week. So the task force will try and do that piece of work over its mailing list and report back on this again to the DNS working group, and perhaps we will close this item out at the next right meeting with some sort of presentation to this working group. But of course, everything will be done on the mailing list and we can see what's going on there. But I think we'll see making a judgment for the task force to say whether the Trust Anchor Repository at IANA meets all the things that we asked for, has all the attributes we felt like, and then we could pretty much then say declare victory and then disband this task force for once and for all. Although hopefully by the time we do that, the route's going to be signed, so this whole issue about Trust Anchor Repositories just goes away completely. Okay, are there any questions? Do we think that's a reasonable way forward? Do we need coffee? I see heads nodding now. Yeah. Do we need beer? I see more heads nodding. Okay. Okay, thank you. Next item. John Crane.
Exactly.
Okay. So, John,
okay.
The floor is yours.
Could you check that the microphone is ready?
Okay, that works. I think we actually need whiskey, but that's a whole different matter. I'm not going to show you my slides, mainly because they're not very good. but I threw them together just to help me with some notes. So who was aware of something called the Global DNS Security, Stability, and Resiliency Symposium? A few people, okay. A few of you were actually there. So late last year, some people came to me from our staff and our executives and said, we know there's a lot of risk involved with the DNS, but it's not actually really documented very well anywhere. So what we decided we would do, myself and a couple of others, was to try and get a group of people together to try and basically document what are the risks associated with the operation of the DNS and using the DNS. We got together with an organization called Georgia Tech, a gentleman called Dave Dagan, who together with myself, chaired the symposium, and we invited about 100 people that we considered to be knowledgeable in either the area of DNS, be that operating, writing server software, writing clients, or in the area of security. And we formed a small working group, four or five people from around the globe, many names that you would know, and tried to pick together a good group of people that were fairly spread across representation. So we had, for example, people from the main operating systems, the main browser writers, obviously the people who wrote a lot of the DNS software, but we also had people from security firms, internet service providers, TLD operators, you know, quite a wide spectrum. So the main purpose was really to try and document some of the risks that we knew and to do a gap analysis to try and figure out if there were things that we hadn't thought of. And there's a report that came out of this, and I've actually just sent it to the working group list. Apologies for that being so late. And we didn't really know how to go about doing this. Right? Nobody's really tried to do this before. So what we did is we chose three areas that we would focus on, and then we picked out three working group chairs, or victims as we like to call them, and made them basically try and run these sessions. So we picked out the use of the DNS in the enterprise, so how do enterprises use the DNS, how is the DNS provisioning, etc., affected in resource constrained environments, that could be from a developing economy, or it could be a small organization. You know, what's the difference? Because sometimes you have different effects. And the other one was combating malicious use of the DNS. That one was very interesting. Unfortunately, I didn't get to go to all three of them. One of the first things that we realized when we started putting together the report, so we did this symposium under Chatham House rules, which means basically your name doesn't get associated with what you said. But the first thing we noticed when going through all the notes, and there was a lot of notes, was that, generally speaking, people aren't really aware of the risks associated with the DNS. None of this is going to come to surprise to people in this room, because we all work with the DNS and we're all very familiar with it. But you have to remember that we also had a lot of other types of people in this room. So the awareness level was extremely low. One of the things that was very clear was that we need to figure out how those of us who operate and those of us who use the DNS, specifically at the higher scale, such as ISPs, can coordinate when bad things happen. As a community, we're not very good at that. A lot of us don't have really clear associations with certs. A lot of the certs don't have knowledge of who operates what, and the same can be said for ISPs. We had a recent event, something called Conficker. I assume a lot of people have heard of that. Come to the OARC meeting on Saturday, where we're going to talk a little bit more about that. But that made use of a lot of names spread across more than 100 zones in the DNS, most of them being country code top-level domains. And that required some coordination, and we really as an industry are not set up to do that. And for those of you who don't realize, ICANN is not a cert. We're not an incident response body, so we're not set up to do that. And really, you know, as an industry, we didn't seem to be. So in February, we said we don't seem to have this, and then in also February and April, some bad guys went and proved the fact for us. So that was interesting. So awareness was a big issue, as was knowledge, the other side of that. So, you know, there's a clear need to spread more knowledge and do more training around operating systems. This issue came up in all three of the subgroups. The other thing that came up that goes along with that is a lack of tools. Really isn't that much out there. Hardly a surprise. There isn't a lot of monitoring tools that are specifically designed for use with DNS for DNS operators. Thanks to the folks who have been writing some of this, such as DSC, et cetera. But a couple of years ago, there was almost nothing. That was another big issue. I'm being told I have time here, so I'm running out. I guess the main thing was that it was the first time we tried doing this. It was really interesting. I think one of the best outcomes was, as always with these kind of things, was the corridor work. A lot of people got to meet people who they normally wouldn't, and had a lot of interesting discussions because of that. The report is about 30 pages long. I just posted a link to the DNS working group. I don't know whether there'll be a second one of these. It was one of the questions at the end. Everybody who bothered filling out the questionnaire, which is always a small percentage, said yes, but we've got to figure out what the purpose is. I sent out the link to the report, and I have a request. Please go and read it, but read it with a mindset where you look at what it raises as the problems and try and think how you or your organization can help with solutions. I mentioned two or three things about awareness, but there's a lot of other things that were raised in this report. So read it with the idea of, do I know a solution for this? Can I be part of the solution? Rather than just reading it as a set of problems. I suspect if we do another symposium next year, that's what we'll be looking at is, have we moved forward? Have we found any solutions? With that, I won't waste any more of your time and sit between you and the whiskey. For those who are thinking that they might want to come next time, we didn't invite Dana Patrick, but we could do for the guy who likes GoDaddy. Thank you. I'll take questions.
Thanks very much, John. We have a 2 minutes or so for questions. Anyone? Volunteers?
Volkan Nagler, RipeNCC, with a question from Jabber, from Edward Lewis, affiliated with Newstar. Since the meeting in February, some people have asked for any reports or evidence that the DNS is attacked in a way that DNSSEC addresses. We have Kaminsky's work to document the vulnerability, but folks want evidence of damage. Do you know of any way to find documented incidents such as that? Is it the certs?
Hi, Ed. I've not seen anything documented that DNSSEC would specifically have solved, no. But this wasn't just about DNSSEC. We deliberately designed or tried to design the symposium not to go down the DNSSEC road because there are 50,000 places to talk about that. We wanted to talk about other risks. Naturally, everybody did because DNSSEC is apparently sexy. Apparently.
Keith Mitchell, ISC and OERC. Actually, just to respond to Wolfgang's question, one of the things that we've done at OERC, and I think we've been to some extent trying to find solutions to some of the questions that John is posing for some years now, is we did experiment with a security incident ticketing system. It's still there, but it doesn't really get used. So we're having some thoughts about better ways to do that. So we're certainly open to input in terms of how do we incident notification and when did bad stuff happen and how do we coordinate response to it.
And I want to point out this was not an ICANN symposium. DNS OERC was one of the co-sponsors, Georgia Tech and also George Mason University. It was really an attempt to get the community together. And I'm really grateful for their support, otherwise we'd never have pulled it off.
Mohsen Suisi, thank you, John, for that initiative. For instance, I'd like to have some feedback. Maybe it may be useful for next edition of this symposium. The term symposium was strong. So maybe people, when they learned about that event happening, they expected maybe there would be a great declaration. DNSSEC is to be deployed by everybody there. So my comment is, we lacked for a long time from some agenda who are the community targeted. should it be the CTO? Should it be the CEO to go there? Should it be two, three persons or only one? So actually, I think there, for the next time, it should be clearly specified who are the communities, if it is similar communities to be targeted, and who, what is the outcome expected of it? Is it a big declaration, or is it something more concrete? And I'm not judging the value of either. Just
yeah. For this first one, the answer to what would come out of it is we didn't know. It was in many ways an experiment, and we tried to avoid the politics of
yeah.
what kind of organizations, etc. Maybe the next one will be different. Maybe we'll put you on the steering committee, and then you can get on the 5 o'clock in the morning calls and help us. Be careful what you ask for, just like DNSSEC.
Okay, I guess that's it. Thanks very much, John, for that report. And with that, I would like to invite Shane to the floor for giving us an update on Bind 10 and the Bind 10 project.
Okay. Yes, unlike our last esteemed speaker, I did put my crappy slides up. So, my name is Shane Kerr. I'm the Bind 10 Program Manager at ISC. And I'm kind of here to discuss the Bind 10 development effort. What happened to date right now is that Joao Dimas has spent a lot of time defining the problem for Bind 10. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about that shortly. And this presentation is mostly based on a white paper that was put together by Joao and Paul Vixie. So it's based largely on that, kind of defining the problem and how it's going to be solved. This will look very, very, very similar to people who saw this at the... This will look very, very similar to people who saw this at the center workshop, but hopefully it won't be too boring. So Bind 9 is a very large piece of software. A recent survey found that it ran on about 80% of the DNS servers in the world. And it's also a very old piece of software. It's approaching its 10th anniversary. And what happens to software as it gets old is the environment that it was designed for kind of changes out from under it. And that's basically what's happened to Bind 9 is the way that we use computers today, the way that DNS works today, and all of that is significantly different than it was a decade ago. So based on this realization, at some point you have to look at your software and decide whether you're going to continue to try to hack it to get to work it, to keep it working with the current environment, or rewrite it from the ground up. So the decision has been made to rewrite it from the ground up. And this decision is based on a number of observed problems with Bind 9, which you see on this slide here. So the first problem that we see with Bind 9 is that it's a monolithic. And what that means is that there's a single program which does everything. And it's a pretty good at everything that it does. We can debate that over coffee. But it is pretty good at everything it does. But it does a lot of things. And if you don't need most of the features, then you have a lot of extra code bloat. You have a lot of extra memory bloat. You have a lot of configuration understand. It requires a lot of training to understand configuration options that you probably won't need. So, that's the first thing on there. The second is a bad process model, which is a fancy way of saying that Bind 9 is a little bit slow. It was originally funded by a bunch of Unix vendors, and they were kind of at the time at the end of the 1990s, it was fashionable to do everything in multi-threaded single processes, shared memory, and it turns out that that's a very good model for writing database front ends and things like that. But it's a very bad model for writing Unix applications that do a lot of UDP packet processing, which is what Bind is. So next thing is Bind 9 is hard to administer. This also comes from this background as being funded by big Unix vendors. It's a very, if it's a standard Unix process, which means it has its nice cryptic configuration files and hard to understand log files. And if you don't understand DNS deeply, then you don't understand what Bind is doing. And even if you do understand DNS very well, you probably still don't understand what Bind is doing. And the final thing on my list here is that Bind9 is hard to hack. And I mean this from a software developer point of view, but also from software development point of view, even at the system administrator level. A lot of times as a system administrator, you like to do little tweaks to get your system to do what you need for it to do. However, with Bind9, if you want to make a small change, it's almost impossible. You have to really understand the entire application in order to do the smallest thing, which has over time led to Bind9 being more and more only modified and adapted by the core ISC development team, which is not to say they don't do a good job, but it's there's only so much a small team can do, and they're not likely to solve your very specific problems, which if it's software that you can change, then you are going to solve them. So, right. So, what is Bind10 going to be? This slide has been presented before, these bullets, so none of this should be too new for people, but I'll go through it very quickly. These are mostly, if you see the first list, these are the answers to that first list. So Bind10 will be modular, meaning that you only have to run the parts that you need for it to run. You have a small footprint. It should also be faster in most circumstances. Our goal, of course, is to beat NSD in all realms, and unbound on the recursive side. Bind10 will also have well-defined APIs and libraries. This is part of the hackability bit. We're also going to be, I'll do my very best to make sure we keep ourselves honest. We won't cheat and go around our APIs. So if it works for us, it should work for you. Customization, again, part of this modularity. Cluster support, this is an area which is especially important as your DNS becomes bigger and bigger. It's starting to get to the point where more and more people need more than one machine for reliability and also for performance. Right now, that's all done with custom shell scripts and routing protocols and very hard to understand things. We intend to make it possible to couple this a little closer to the actual application. Integration with existing workflows. I didn't write this, but I think it means that we want to run well with Windows, so or other existing environments that do address management and namespace management, things like that. Resilience, if you've ever had Bind9 say assertion failed or insist failed, then you know what this means. Part of Bind9's design was to avoid any possible security problems. If at any time the code discovered that there was something that it didn't understand, it would end, which is a very safe way to operate, but it's not very satisfying as a user when your name server restarts and you have customers losing queries. And better runtime control. This is kind of another effect of being modular, is that the system, right now a lot of things require configuration changes and restarts and things like that. Everything will be done through some sort of messaging communication between the different parts of the application. So if a new interface becomes available on your name server, it might automatically detect it and start answering on that if you configure it that way. And that's kind of the idea there. So what exactly is going on with the Bind10 project? That's the vaporware. That's the white paper stuff. So what is this actually going to look like? It's a 5-year mission. I won't say anything else beyond that. The first official deliverable is going to be within 1 year as of April 1st. So if you're looking for something that you can download, really, if you're looking for something that you can download and run and have it do something, and that's going to be an authoritative-only server, the main point of that is not to actually have a product that you can use, although I'm hoping that some people will actually be able to use it to solve their problems. The main point is going to be we want to put all this glue and all this framework together and then have something that we can build from that point on. And the authoritative name server is to make it something that's actually useful. What do we have right now? We have a set of sponsors, as you can see right there. Thank you very much for their support. They're actually all really great. We're still working out exactly how we're going to work together. Some of them are giving monies. Well, everyone's giving money on that list. Some people are also giving staff. And other I'm hoping technical expertise as well. That'll be very nice. And requirements, of course, and things like that. The sponsor list is not fixed. I expect there to be more work in year two than there is in year one, so we'd like additional sponsors. You'll also notice that all of those sponsors are top-level domains, which I personally hope will expand out. I'd like to see big ISPs, people running recursive resolvers, also be sponsors to make sure their requirements don't get forgotten and how they do business works well with the software. I'd also like to see perhaps some embedded vendors involved in the list. I don't know, maybe I can convince the Android project just to participate in things like that. Right, so it's an ISC project, which means that ISC is the one that's going to be hiring the coders. We have some coders already. We'll be needing some more. We'll also be doing all the project management and the communication and things like that. All the sponsors right now are on the steering committee to keep us honest. So you don't have to worry about us being hijacked by some crazy idea that I have to turn this into a Whois server or something like that. Right, so that's kind of the big picture. We sent out a press release 2 weeks ago, which is the official announcement, and that's kind of the kickoff from my point of view. You've probably heard about this project before, and you're wondering, well, this sounds like another kickoff presentation, but this is the real one. This is it. We're really getting started, and that's it.
Okay, thank you, Shane. I guess we have time for one or two questions. Anyone, please use the microphone, and the slots are assigned.
Dmitry Burkov, I have one very simple question. With whom to discuss sponsorship?
With me.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Jim?
Yeah, Jim Reed. Shane, I think this is a great idea, and I have a little bit of a concern. Is the intention here for Bind9's broad requirements lastly going to be based around what the sponsors believe to be the requirements of a piece of software that meets their specific needs? And second following question with that is there a way for people who are not in a position to contribute resources, whether that's financial or programming expertise, to give some input into the general guidance about things like requirements and comment on them? I mean, if I'm a random member of the public that has some degree of interest in DNS software, how can I give information to ISC about the nice things that my shopping list of requirements and features that I would like to see in Bind 10 if I'm not a sponsor?
Sure. Well, your first question is, I think the answer is pretty straightforward, is that Bind 10 is going to be DNS for everyone. So one of the goals of Bind 9 was to be a reference implementation for all of the RFCs. My personal belief is that it does a very bad job at that. It does implement the RFCs, but it's very bad reference implementation because you can't read the code and understand how it's supposed to work. So certainly we'll meet all the RFC standards. My own personal preference is that ISC is a public benefit corporation. We're there to do good for the internet. We're not just there to do good for the sponsors. So for instance, right now, people did some surveys, I believe, last year, looking at home routers and the DNS that they provide, and discovered a lot of problems. I think a lot of that is because people writing embedded systems have no alternatives. They have to download small software written by a student over a weekend, and it doesn't implement the standards very well. If Bind 10 scales down, which I very much want it to do, then that will help address that area. And that's an area that none of our sponsors have any direct interest in. It doesn't help them do their business. Although, of course, it will help them because as the quality of DNS on the internet improves, everyone benefits.
But are you doing something, say, Shane, like thinking about having a set of open mailing lists where people can contribute comments,
right,
and advice, that kind of thing, even if they're not directly involved,
right,
in this project?
So this kind of segues into your next question, which is how you can participate. One of the problems also with Bind9 is that it is done by this kind of small, closed group of developers. And even contributed code has to be kind of vetted and audited and either adopted or it suffers almost immediate bit rot. One of my goals for Bind10 is for that not to be the case. There will be a lot of proactive communication. I'm going to set up a blog. There's already an announced mailing list. We have actually a technical writer on staff now. He's going to be producing articles about the design decisions that we make. That's on the outbound side. On the inbound side, yes, there will be a public Bind 10 developer mailing list that you can participate on. We're going to be publishing our ideas about design and our decisions along with our rationales as we make them. So that documentation will be, as much as I can make happen, available on the internet. You can look at it. And then, of course, be very interested in having discussions about whether it fits your environment, whether you think it's going to work in the future, and so on. So, yes, I'm hoping for much more open and community-driven than current Bind development.
Okay, thank you very much, Shane.
Okay, thanks, Shane. And I guess... Okay, with that we are lacking a bit in time and running into the coffee break, I guess. Anand is next with the report from the RIPNCC, and while he's going to find his slides on the laptop, I'd like to do another show of hands here. For how many of you, this is the first DNS working group session that you visit? Okay, lucky enough you're sitting in the front. That is like 35 people. Okay. The one thing that we have been having on the agenda for a couple of meetings, or actually a couple of years now, I guess, is this list of reports. And us chairs are lacking a bit of feedback as to the length or depth of these reports. So I'm not going to do a survey right now and here, but if you have any opinion on that, either positive or negative, please try to catch one of us three in the hallway and give us feedback whether you want to see more or less of that or have other ideas or contribution or would like to see someone else contribute something so we can improve and make this valuable sessions for all of us. Thank you. Anand, it's yours.
Thanks, Peter. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Anand Buttadev. I manage the DNS services department at the RIPNCC. And this is a quick update on what we've been doing so far. Before I start my actual presentation, I'd like to cover the action point 57.1, which was an action on the NCC, and that was to do with the RIPNCC's trust anchors in the ISC DLV. We did go away and look at it, and one of the things that we as the NCC are strongly in favor of is, of course, for the root to be signed. And the ISC DLV was also in testing, so we hadn't actually taken any action to upload our trust anchors into the DLV. However, we discovered a few days ago that the trust anchors have been imported into ISC's DLV. And that came as a little bit of a surprise to us. We have contacted ISC about this, and we have the facts now about when it was added and at whose decision it was. But that's the current status. The RIPNCC trust anchors are in the in the ISC DLV at the moment. But we did not put them there. So that's the situation. I suppose we could have a discussion about that after the presentation.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. All right. My presentation, just a quick introduction. It's a small team at RIPNCC which does DNS services. There's Sjoerd Oosthuijzen, whom you can see here, and Wolfgang Nagelow, who's also doing the Jabber, and myself. We provide a number of services, among them Kroot. We operate one of the 13 root servers on the internet. We do reverse DNS for all the IP address space that is allocated out of RIPE NCC. We provide secondary DNS services for some ccTLDs. We also do the operations of the enum zone, and we also operate an AS112 node at M6. We're also involved in DNSSEC, DNS security. We sign all our forward and reverse zones. And finally, we provide internal services for the RIPE NCC. We manage the RIPE.NET zone and all its associated children. A little bit about Kroot. Our operations are quite stable. We still have 17 instances. There's been no change since then, since the last Ripe meeting, I mean. We see peaks of up to about 25,000 queries per second. This is not normal. The average is about 17 to 18,000, but we do sometimes get query storms, and that's the peak that we see. We're now providing IPv6 service from 9 of our 17 instances. Since Ripe 57, we've added London and Reykjavik. Reykjavik sees something like, you know, maybe one query a second or something like that over IPv6. But hey, it's IPv6. The total query rate over IPv6 is approximately 200 per second. And you can see that in this snapshot, which is taken with DSC. This graph would also be available on the k.rootservice.net website if you wanted to take a look. We have several things planned for Kroot this year and next. We are in the process of replacing hardware at several of the instances as it reaches the end of its life. We also want to do IPv6 in two more instances, that's Tokyo and Poznan. Tokyo should be done very soon after Ripe 58. We're also in the process of promoting the instance in Frankfurt to that of global. So in other words, we will be announcing our prefix globally. We're also going to be doing a number of updates to the server operating system, and we're also updating to NSD3 because NSD2, which we currently use, is end of life now. One of the other things is that we are going to expand Kroot's network. We're going to cooperate with Afrinic and introduce more Kroot instances in their service region, which is Africa. We hope to get a memorandum of understanding signed between ourselves and Afrinic very soon at their meeting in Cairo. And the initial deployments are likely to be in Tanzania and Mozambique. Others are still under review. And what we're trying to do with these deployments is keep the cost down. And so we're developing a different model of deployment there, and we're calling it Kroot Lite. And the idea is to make it affordable for our hosts in Africa to be able to operate an instance of Kroot. Our other service, Reverse DNS, all our servers combined see a total query rate of about 50,000 per second. One of our servers, ns.ripe.net, which does secondary service for several /16 IPv4 and IPv6 zones, is now a cluster. It's doing load balancing, and that makes it more resilient. And internally, we are working on a new provisioning system. This is to convert domain objects in the Ripe database into actual DNS delegation. Our current software is a little bit old and has a few features missing, which we'd like to add. So we're working on that. One of the issues I'd like to bring up in this presentation is that of child zone delegations in reverse DNS. The Ripe database at the moment allows creation of /24 domain objects even when the parent /16 object exists. And what the provisioning system does is that it ignores these /24 domain objects because the DNS doesn't allow us to delegate /24 if we're already delegating at the /16 boundary. Here's an example. If 192.94.inadder.arpa was in the Ripe database, then we'd do the delegation for this. And the existence of anything below it, for example, 119.192.94.inadder.arpa, would be completely ignored. And this leads to some problems. We get questions from DNS operators. Yes, but I created a domain object, and why isn't my delegation working? There's also sometimes questions from end users. They say, yeah, but the rights database doesn't quite agree with what we see in the DNS. And there's stale data in the rights database. All these /24 domain objects which exist but are of no use, perhaps besides for documentation purposes, many of them are actually not maintained because they have no operational impact and therefore maybe stale. We'd like to propose a solution for this is to tighten the RIPE database rules to disallow creation of /24 domain objects if the parent exists, and at some point in the future inform maintainers of /24 domain objects and then actually delete them. The deletion would have no operational impact because these objects are completely ignored by the provisioning system, so there would be no change, no impact in the DNS. Just some numbers. At the moment, there are 431 /16 domain objects which have all these, which have unnecessary child objects, and there's a total of 15,433 child objects which are ignored by the provisioning system and have no effect. Moving on to DNSSEC, we track numbers of DS records in all the reverse zones, and here you can see a graph of the numbers from RIPE 54 up to RIPE 58. As you can see, it's growing very slowly, so that means there's a few more DS records every time at every new RIPE meeting, but it's still very small. We have approximately 400,000 NS sets, and out of that we only have about just under 180 DS records. Our DNSSEC plans for the future, we would like to review our current policies and procedures. We'd like to do that after RIPE 58. Our DNS signer is due for a replacement. Both the hardware is going to reach the end of its life, and we'd like to replace that. And the actual signing function, we use a software-based signer at the moment, and we'd like to improve upon that and replace it with a possibly HSM-based solution. Coming to Enum, there's a separate presentation about this tomorrow, so I won't go into too many details there. Operations are stable. There's been one new delegation since RIPE 57, and that's Taiwan. The zone has been signed since November 2007, and currently two of the delegations are secure. The RIPE NCC also provides secondary service for some of the CCTLDs. We do this on a best effort basis. We don't charge for this. But, of course, this puts us in the position of being at competition with some of our members. And so we've been phasing out this service, especially for some of the large and well-developed CCTLDs. We've had three iterations, and we've phased 16 of the CCTLDs out. Of the remaining ones, we have no plans, planned iterations, but we will phase them out as and when they mature and have the resources to operate their own services. And then a quick word on DNSMON. This is not a service that we operate. This is operated by our colleagues in the information services, but there have been some interesting enhancements. DNSMON now has support for Anycast reporting. Unfortunately for you, this is currently only enabled for the root servers, so most of you will not be able to see this. Only the root servers are able to use and see this feature at the moment. There are two types of reports available in here. There's a report by root server instance, and there's also a report that you can see by TTM probe, examples of these coming up. Here is a graph of a per instance report. So on this graph, on the x-axis you can see time. On the y-axis is an indication of the number of probes that see a particular instance of of our TTM cloud, particular instance of KRoot, I mean. So this gives you an idea of how many probes see a particular instance.
Okay, Anand, could that probably be also mentioned in the NCC Services Working Group for people interested?
Yes, there'll be more details about this.
Okay, so I'm sorry, but I'd like to ask you to skip this then.
Yes,
great.
And my presentation is actually done.
No, fine. Okay, I guess we have time for one or two questions, and we need to discuss the action item issue.
Yes.
Wilfried.
Yeah, Wilfried Weber, Vienna University, and wearing two separate hats at the same time. One head being a local registry manager and the other one being the database working group chair. And I'd really like to follow up on this set of slides regarding the overhaul of the provisioning mechanisms, because I think there are quite a few rough edges in different places. And I'd really like to get, first of all, to get the problem statement or the draft solution a proposal or whatever it looks like, also distributed to the database working group. As you were talking about changes to the object syntax, which I am not really convinced that it's going to be a syntax change. It's probably a change of internal consistency double checks or whatever. But still, I really would ask you here publicly sort of to share your information base.
Yeah.
And to share your plans and to share sort of your problem statement, because I do have a few items from my end, and I think that could be very useful to actually enter on a more formal basis into this discussion and try to come up with a good solution.
Indeed, we have no plans to make any changes before we consult with the community.
Because, for example, one of those
okay,
things.
Hang on. Let me go into authoritarian mode here. There is an action item hanging off the roof here on Wilfried, Anand, and probably me to, as the chairs, to coordinate, sit together to get this sorted out, and we won't solve this here right now and here. The queues are closed, by the way, and George wanted to respond immediately to Wilfried, and then Mohsen, and then we go on to this action item.
George Michelson from APNIC. Sister RIRs obviously never, never tell each other what to do, so please do not misunderstand me. I will try not to overreach, but I wanted to observe that Aaron had a very strong in-depth discussion about the management input provisioning system they are reconsidering, and it was observed that LACNIC have adopted modified EPP and that APNIC has adopted a REST mechanism using XML, and I would plead with you in that sense on behalf of the members who have responsibilities in multiple regions to please think about member internal provisioning systems and the likelihood that there is a separation between public representation, which is who is, and management upload, which is not the same thing, and that you have an opportunity here to consider some convergence options. But I'm not trying to tell you what to do. I'm just observing discussions have gone on in other regions.
Appreciated. Thanks.
Thanks, George. And you would probably be available to give some more detailed input to this. Thank you. Thank you very much. Mohsen.
Mohsen Suisi, a very short question. The 180 DS records, is it an aggregate V4, V6 reverse or something
yes.
else? Okay, so by curiosity, how much is the proportion of IPv6 in it? Just to know whether people care of a combination of V6 and DNSSEC that's explosive or just don't care.
I wouldn't want to venture a guess because I don't know that off the top of my head, but I'm happy to tell you later on.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Okay, you could just follow up to the mailing list, I guess. Yeah. Thank you so much. Wilfried, once again?
Yeah, last sentence. Sort of the invitation and sort of the plea for the community here. As soon as we go ahead with this sort of discussion, I would ask you really to review your expectations about any new version of this provisioning system. Because my feeling is that the machinery which is out there is slightly out of sync with the current operational practices, and we may be lacking one or two things which might be easy to wire in right from the beginning rather than to tacking them on from the side. Thank you.
Okay, once again, we have, thank you, Wilfried. We have action item 58.1 to deal with this issue, and I guess we'll figure out the exact wording later as soon as we come back to that. I would, after consulting with Jim, would like to propose that we postpone the discussion on 57.1 to tomorrow's session, where A, we have another report from you, which we could steal some time from, and we have a TAR discussion anyway, so somewhere in between we will fit that, and you're all, of course, invited to be there again. And with that, I would like to, and with apologies, I'd like to ask Jaromir to give us the update on DNSSEC in VZ, and this will run into the coffee break. Be nice. To him, at least.
Hope no problem with ODP. So, hello, everybody. I will try to be as quick as possible. I will give you a real brief overview of deployment of DNSSEC in CZ. I apologize, my name is Jaromír Talíř from CZNIC. I will start with deployment schedule. DNSSEC was our 2008 project. We started in January, and after some community comment period, we signed both our zones, Enum zones and .cz zone. And actual deployment into production was done in September 30, at the end of September. Four slides about our DNSSEC solution. Slightly modified our registry to accept keys by creating a new primary object called keyset, which is actually a container for DNS key records. And this new object can be attached to domain. So we don't accept DS records, we accept DNS key records. So we are not EPP compliant, but we think that this is much better solution for us because it supports sharing of keys between domains, which is used quite often in .cz, and such a type of container also enables to have multiple keys to associate it with domain. Registration of such key set is free. We didn't make any change in zone generation period. Still, it's done each 30 minutes. And these records are generated from DNSSEC key records using SHA-1 algorithm. Our DNSSEC keys, we have two DNSSEC keys, zone signing key and key signing key. We have just recently rolled over our zone signing key because we are half of the year after DNSSEC deployment. For signing, we use DNSSEC sign zone tool. We faced a huge increase in zone size from 40 megabytes to 180. And because we are transferring zone to 19 second location, we had to find some solution to get over a memory and bandwidth problem. So we created some scripts for reusing signatures during signing process. And right now we don't have any problems with size of our zone. We use incremental transfer, of course. We wanted to use HSM machine, but there were some problems with sign zone tool, which we tried to resolve with coordination, it's ISC. Currently, we offer four ways of publishing of our public keys. We have public keys on our web pages, signed with PGP keys. We have mailing list where we notify about changes in our keys. And of course, we put our keys in DLV, registry, and ITAR. Right now, we are 6 months in production, and we have almost 800 signed domains distributed among 10 registrars. But actually, just two of them offer bigger support for DNSSEC. And what's interesting that all of these domains from these two registrars share one key. Also, several but not too much ISPs enable the validation on their resolvers. This is you can see that the number of signed domains is growing quite smoothly. What we are doing now, we are trying to do some evangelization about DNSSEC, so we chose some important domains and trying to contact them and explain them what DNSSEC is and trying to convince them to sign their domains. We had few success, like some portals, IT portals, and our biggest online bookstore. What's going to be promising, one government department, one bank, maybe our presidency domain, we hope, will be signed before our presidency will expire, which is soon. But we also have some failures. We're trying to convince Google to sign its domain. But we've got a response that there are some technical problems, and I think it's a pity because a lot of portals in our country do what Google does. So we will hope it will change. We also the second project for 2008 was some sort of academy, which is training center for about 20 people, and we made DNS and DNSSEC courses for until now about 70 people, coming from our association members, registrars, ISPs, some governmental stuff. Now we are opening it to public. We created a DNSSEC homepage with DNSSEC setup wizard. What to do, how to sign zone, how to set up resolvers to do validation. And on this web page, there is also a simple check whether your local resolver enables DNSSEC validation, which looks like this. On the right side, there is a red key if your resolver doesn't support validation, and green key if it supports validation. Interesting is that this snapshot or screenshot was done about an hour ago in ballroom, in Grand Ballroom, so it looks like local DNS resolvers doesn't support DNSSEC validation, so this is probably where we can start. So this is all.
Thank you, Jaromir.
Any question?
Questions, one or two. Jim, are you?
Jim Reed, again, I think you've done some great work here. I congratulate everybody at the CCTLD registry for all they've done. The training materials and other things that you're talking about, are those documents in English or in Czech? And would they be made available if they were in English to a wider audience than just the people in the Czech Republic who are doing DNSSEC?
If you mean the material on our DNSSEC.cz pages...
I was thinking about your training courses and other material like that.
Yeah, the training courses are for our local people. They are in Czech, and also until now the whole material is in Czech, but it's not necessary to... Or it's possible to make a translation, and we will probably prepare some document about our success. Andrej wants something to add.
Well, Andrej Suli, CZNIC. I am the one doing the courses. Well, I have no problem doing them in English as well. But right now, all materials are all only in Czech.
Okay, thank you.
Lars Forsberg, Lupia. What's the basic response from your registrars? What problems do they have with DNSSEC mostly?
Well, We don't face any large problems. We had some problems that probably in one case registrar published DNS key into .cz but forgot to sign his zone, so the domain was inaccessible. But generally, there are no problems. They just have to update their systems to accept this key, and probably this takes some time.
Okay. One further question. Do your registrars have any problems with domain names moving between registrars, one supporting DNSSEC and the new one does not?
Well, until now, I think they didn't have any problems because there are such situations where domain is transferred and DNS keys stay the same. So I think that if they support DNSSEC, they already solved this.
Okay, thank you.
One last sentence?
Yeah, it's just a comment to the Andrei Phillips, he's as well. It's just a comment. We also face some problem that some registrar are also DNS hosting providers, and then they do not have bind or some DNSSEC aware daemon, so they have sometimes problem. They need to switch their platform, so that's one thing. And regarding the transfer, as we have separate objects for keys and for domains, they can transfer domain without transferring the key, so they can keep the DNSSEC records by the old registrars.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Jaromir. And thanks, everyone, for your patience. Thanks to your online scribes and the mini-takers for our support staff. See you tomorrow morning, 9 o'clock, hopefully, unless you enjoy too much of the AMSIX party tonight. But keep trying. See you. Thank you.